My name is Sebastian. I work for Google. I've been with Google as a systems engineer for a little bit over 10 years now. And one of the many functions that I've had during my tenure at Google is I've been taking a particular interest in launches. I've been taking a particular interest in how to take new products or new features from being unlaunched to being available with a minimum of hassle and with a maximum of success. So that's what I want to be talking about here. I'm going to be talking about reliable launches at scale. And we're going to be picking apart the title of this talk a little bit in the next couple of minutes. So if we want to pick apart the title, then the first thing we need to do, well, the first thing we can talk about is, what is a launch? What are we talking about when we're talking about launches? Most people are going to be thinking about something like this when we're talking about launches. But I'm not a rocket engineer. Is anybody here one? No, we're not putting people on the moon. We're not putting stuff in space. So this doesn't really work for us as a definition. So we're going to need some other kind of definition of what is a launch. And I have to say, even inside Google, this is not always completely obvious. I was having lunch with a coworker yesterday, and one of the things he asked me was, Sebastian, you're giving a talk tomorrow. What is it about? You're talking about releases, right? It's like, no, I'm not talking about releases. I am talking about launches. Releases is something that's supposed to happen like clockwork. You do it once a week, once every 2 weeks, maybe several times a week. It just happens, and you're just pushing new code out on a regular basis. Launches are a lot more exciting. Launches are something that, in the lifetime of a product or a feature, happens exactly once. And it's the one crucial moment that you cannot miss. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about taking something from not being available to the world and exposing it for everybody to see. So what are we defining as a launch here? The internal definition that we use at Google for a launch is that a launch is any new code that introduces an externally visible change to an application. And launches, defined this broadly, come in a large variety. You can have a launch that is as small as, well, we're going to move this button on that page from the left to the right. You can have launches that are as big as, we're going to launch an internet service provider. And all of these are internally classified as launches. And we want to make all of these reliable and make them work at scale. So let's talk about the second part of the title. Let's talk about what does scale mean in this context. Scale means that Google performs a lot of these. Google has lots of new code that introduces externally visible changes. So I crunched the numbers a bit on our launch tracking system, and the number that I came up with is that we perform up to 180 launches per week that introduce some kind of externally visible change to our applications. Actually, these are only production impacting launches. These are only launches where we believe that there is some sort of danger to our production systems from these. So 180 launches per week that somebody needs to look at and decide, is this safe to go out or not? Most of these actually do not require full reviews. So a lot of these are fast-tracked, and we'll talk about how that works later on. In total, we're talking about 150 launches per quarter that somebody needs to have an in-depth look at and engage with. And for the total scope of our launch tracking system, we are tracking about 7,000 launches per week, up to 7,000 launches per week in our launch tracking system. But this is everything from, say, marketing campaigns to launches of new products or new companies. And the other thing that we need to talk about is how the volume of launches is growing. So this is the scope, or this is the rate of our production impacting launches since 2006, since we started using this launch tracking system. And you can see that it's actually nicely exponentially increasing. In fact, the abstract to the talk still says 70, up to 70 launches per week. This was before I redid the numbers and realized that by now we're actually peaking at 180. And this is only going to get worse. We're only going to launch more and more stuff. So how do we make launches reliable at scale? Because we don't want to spend an exponential number of people, an exponentially growing number of people, on making these launches safe. So we need some sort of process that allows us to scale our launches without using more people. But before we go into that, before we go into how we scale this process, let's look a little bit at why launches are difficult, so the factors that make launches difficult. And for that, I want to illustrate this with a little example. It's this one. Who here has heard about Google Santa Tracker? Very few people. So Google Santa Tracker is a project that's been running for over 10 years now, where Every year at Christmas, Google launches a website, the Santa Tracker, where kids all around the world can look up online where Santa is right now, can track Santa's trajectory around the world, and can see when Santa is going to deliver presents to their part of the world. And this sounds kind of whimsical. I mean, yeah, we're doing a fun little website for kids to look at, and they're going to have fun, and they're going to watch Santa flying over the world and everything. So this sounds like a kind of whimsical thing, but if you look at it in more detail, it actually has all the characteristics that make a launch difficult. And in fact, there have been times in the past where we were seriously worried that this whimsical little website would actually bring our production systems to their knees. So let's look at why Santa Tracker is so complicated and so difficult. So what makes a launch difficult? First of all, first factor that makes launches difficult is hard deadlines. And Santa Tracker has one of those, because Santa Tracker has to be up on Christmas Eve. We cannot tell Santa to postpone his present delivery by a week because we are not ready to launch. So Santa Tracker has a hard deadline. Next factor that makes launches difficult, publicity. If there's users, if there's customers, if there's press waiting for you to launch something, then you need to land that launch right at the time where you announced it. And Santa Tracker has publicity. Kids all over the world are waiting for it. Large audience. Kids, millions of kids around the world are waiting for this thing to be up because they want to know when Santa is going to deliver presents. And you don't want to disappoint like millions of kids waiting for Santa. That would be a really cruel thing to do. We actually, in one of the instances of this, we had kill switches built into the website, sort of when we, if we noticed that it could bring our, it could bring our systems to their knees, we could turn parts of the experience off. And the internal name for those kill switches was, they were the make children cry switches. Because they would stop, the kill switches would stop Santa from delivering presents. Steep traffic ramp up. Once this thing is up, kids are going to be using it. This thing actually has a waiting page, so it will show a countdown to Christmas. And once that counter goes to zero, kids are going to be watching it, and kids are going to be waiting for it. So there's going to be steep traffic ramp up of kids waiting for this thing. And unpredictable user behavior. We don't really know what the kids are going to do on this. And the last thing, I mentioned this one before, actually doesn't hold quite as well for the Santa tracker, because we've done this a couple of times now. But the last one is, the initial launch is a rare event per product. You're only going to launch something once. Except for Santa Tracker, we're launching that once every year. But in general, you're only going to launch a product once. So if you're only launching a product once in its entire life cycle, ramping up for the launch event, you're building a lot of knowledge, you're building a lot of expertise in the product development team that is only ever going to be used once. Because once the product is out there, the launch is over, it's not going to happen again. So that sounds kind of wasteful. And it also sounds kind of haphazard, because you're trying to build this expertise for something that you've never done before in the product team and that you're never going to need again. So what do you do when you're faced with this sort of situation where you have where you're trying to build knowledge that you're gonna, that you're maybe not gonna use again in the exact same circumstances? So how do we make this process scale and not make it a one-off per product? How do you perform these 180 launches per week? Well, the answer to that is you externalize the knowledge and you capture the knowledge that you've gained over hundreds and hundreds and thousands of launches, you capture that in a reproducible process. And Google has been honing their launch process, our launch process, over the 10 plus years that we've been running it. And we've found a couple of things that are important for making this kind of process successful. So let's go through a couple of them. The first thing that you want, well, in this launch process, but probably also in a lot of other processes, is you want it to be lightweight. You don't want to put a product team that is already in crunch mode because they want to meet their launch deadline. You don't want to put that product team through more stress by putting them by inflicting like a heavyweight launch process on them. And well, one of the reasons for that is you want to be nice to them. You don't want to stress them out even more when they're already in crunch mode. The other reason why we want this process to be lightweight is kind of human nature, human psychology. If you try to inflict something on them that is too heavyweight, people will become creative in trying to sidestep the process. They will try to find ways of doing as little of that process as possible if they can not follow the process at all. And you don't want that. You don't want people to sidestep the process, because the process is there for a reason. You're not doing this for the sake of the process. The next characteristic you want is you want it to be robust and reproducible. We're putting hundreds of launches through this process, and we want it to be reproducible. We want to get similar results every time we do this. At the same time, we want it to be thorough. We don't want to miss obvious things in the launch process. We don't want several launches in a row and be like, wait, that thing, oh yeah, that actually blew things up for us several times in a row. I already mentioned the wide variety of launches that we perform at Google. So we need the launch process to be adaptable. We need to be able to launch everything from a button on a website to an entirely new company, to like an internet service provider or a domain registry through this process. And the last thing is we want it to be scalable. We need to scale to 180 launches per week and beyond. And all of these criteria, they interact with each other. And sometimes they even contradict each other. So, for example, looking at lightweight and thorough, it's kind of difficult to design a process that is both at the same time, that is sort of light touch, but it still explores all the possible things that could go wrong. Similarly, for robust and adaptable, well, if we're asking the same kinds of questions every time, then we're going to have a hard time adapting to different circumstances, to launching something completely new. And we launch completely new things on a pretty regular basis. I mean, we gotten into hardware launches, we gotten into ISPs, we've gotten into so many different fields, and we still want to provide the same kind of experience. Let's look at another one, thorough and scalable. Well, if we present the same in-depth questionnaire to every launch, then we're not going to be able to scale this process without spending more manpower on it. And all of these have some sort of interaction with each other. So how do we cut this Gordian knot of requirements and actually make this launch process work in practice? So for making it work in practice, we found three things that are important. First one is simplicity. You have to catch the obvious things that will go that may trip you up in every launch, and you can probably skip a couple of the more esoteric ones. So it is kind of human nature, if you've been burned once by something happening, to try and prevent this from happening in the future. This is kind of what SRE is about. We try to make the same mistakes only once. But this sort of attitude can very quickly make your launch process spiral out of control. If for every mistake, for every disaster that happened to a launch, you try to capture that in the launch process, you very quickly end up with something that is not navigatable anymore. So concentrate on the things that you know are important, and the more esoteric things that could go wrong, just leave them out. Next one is we try to provide fast common paths. Once we identified a particular class of launchers that needed a specific specific areas that you have to pay attention to, then we provided a fast common path. One example for this is you're launching a product in a new language, which we're doing on a fairly regular basis, and we know how to do it, and we know that that the impact of the production systems from that is going to be minimal. So we have a fast path that says, well, if this is an existing product that you're just launching in a new language, then use this abbreviated process. And the last thing we did is something we called a high-touch approach. If you have a body of knowledge that is going to be useful at one specific time in the life cycle of a product, one thing you can do is you can concentrate that body of knowledge in a specific group of people. So basically, rather than having all the individual teams build that body of knowledge themselves, you concentrate it in the brains of specific people, and then you send those specific people around to the products that are in that part of the life cycle. And every time you do that, they're going to add little bits of more information to their body of knowledge, which they're in turn going to take to the next product that they're launching. So who are these people? These people are called launch lead engineers. It's actually a job that I did for about 3.5 years in my career at Google. And these are the people that engage with the product teams during launch time, run the launch process, customize it to the specific requirements of the engagement that they're working in, and also gather knowledge and take it on to the next engagement. At some point, we actually called these launch coordination engineers, and the team that they work in is still called launch coordination engineering, but it did that job title caused some confusion because, well, it's quite easy to see how you can be the lead engineer for something, but it's not as obvious how you engineer a coordination. So we got rid of that title, and we came up with a new one. We're calling them launch lead engineer. But you will occasionally see them be referred to as launch coordination engineers or the team as launch coordination engineering. So what do these people do? I mentioned that they're basically roving engineers. They engage with product teams at the time when a product team is launching a new product. And they play a variety of roles in these engagements. So what do? First thing they do is they play auditors. They will have an in-depth look at the product that is being launched. They will do architecture reviews. They will talk with the engineers. They will try to figure out how specific parts of the product work. And they try to figure out, is this good to launch? Or will this blow up on us on launch day? And by doing this audit process and by determining whether we think this is going to be good to launch, they also play a certain gatekeeper role. So they are the ones that sign off on new products. We're saying, yes, this is good to launch. We believe this is safe. It's not going to endanger Google's production systems, and it's going to be a successful launch from the technical side. Although I try to not stress the gatekeeper role of the launch coordination engineers too much. In my experience in the role, the fewer times you have to say no, the more successful you are as a launch lead engineer. If you never have to tell a product team, no, you cannot launch, then you're the better engineer. So if you have to tell them, nope, you did things wrong, you cannot launch this, then you didn't do your job. Third role they play is liaison between different teams collaborating on launching a new product. Very often I found that when you have products that have implications on many different parts of the company, there is nobody owning this launch from the technical side. You will have the individual service teams building their part of the feature set, but nobody really has an overview of what is needed to launch this product from the technical side. So very often, the launch lead engineer will step in and get all the teams on the same table and ask questions about how things are going to work together. For example, what are capacity implications of launches from one part of the system to another? Or what are the implications on the rollout process? Which one of you actually needs to be done first before somebody else can launch? So they play this kind of liaison role between different teams in the process. They also play liaison between the SRE teams that support services that are affected by this launch and the product development teams. Role number four is they are drivers for technical blockers to the launch. So they will identify blockers that will make the launch, that put the launch in jeopardy from the technical side, from the production side, and they will drive these issues to conclusion. So they will point them out during the audit process, but they will also take it on themselves to interact with the different teams and drive these issues. And the last thing is launch lead engineers are also educators. Because I've talked about the body of knowledge that they amass in as part of their job. And they take this body of knowledge with them to new products that they're launching. So they play an educator role of saying, well, you know, this problem that you're trying to solve here, actually, this other team in another part of the company has already solved that. So go and talk with them and ask them how they solved it and learn from their experience. Or this problem that you're trying to solve here, we actually have standard, we have standard libraries or standard services for this. Don't build your own, use what we already have. So that's how they play an educator role. Now, you might be saying, why do we need this specialized role? Shouldn't a good engineer know all of these things? Shouldn't a good engineer be able to build stuff that works from the start? But this is kind of similar to the question that we sometimes get about site reliability engineering. Do we really need engineers that specialize just in site reliability? Like, shouldn't good engineers be able to build reliable products anyway? Why do we need site reliability engineers? And looking at this question on that light, we did find three main reasons why it makes sense to have launch lead engineers as a separate role. So the first one is what I've already mentioned, breadth of experience. While the product engineers might be very specialized in building the kind of product that they're working on, launch lead engineers have a wide breadth of experience of taking different types of products through the production launch. And in fact, launch coordination engineering is one of the few teams at Google that are active across truly all of the company. So if you're a launch coordination engineer, if you're a launch lead engineer, you might be working on a YouTube launch one week, on a Gmail launch the next week, and then on a search launch the week after. So you get exposure to all different parts of the company and how they do things. Second reason why it makes sense to concentrate this knowledge is cross-functional perspective. Launch lead engineers are used to working with a wide variety of functions inside the company. They're used to working with SRE, with product engineering, they're used to working with marketing, with the webmasters, et cetera, et cetera. So they already have these pre-existing relationships, and they already know how these different parts of the company operate. And the last reason why it's good to have this job function is that they act as non-partisan advisors. So they don't take the position of the product engineering team that wants to get a product out on launch date and as quickly as possible. They don't take the position of the marketing team that wants to make a big splash with a new product. They don't take the position of the SRE team that doesn't want to endanger the stability of the systems. They mediate between the different parties that are involved in a launch and provide this non-partisan perspective. So, now that we've talked about the job role, let's talk about how to make launchers reliable. Because in order to make a launch reliable, you need to tick a whole lot of boxes. You need to have the right architecture to have a stable product. You need to have enough capacity to be able to weather the capacity needs on launch day. You want reliability from the start. You don't want to launch a new product that is unreliable from the start. You need monitoring to figure out what is actually happening in the system. You need automation for your processes. You need to be prepared for growth in the product. You need to be aware of your dependencies. You need to get the rollout right, et cetera, et cetera. So you need to check all of these boxes. And if we abstract this process of checking boxes away a little bit, we end up with this. It's a checklist. And as simple or as trivial as it seems, we've actually found that a checklist is the most successful tool for achieving this type of reliability from the start. And it's not entirely surprising. I mean, we found checklists to be extremely valuable in a variety of different fields where reliability is important. The thing that prevents your surgeon from forgetting a scalpel inside your abdomen when they're operating you, that is a checklist. So we're using checklists in operating theaters to make surgery more reliable. We're using them in aviation to make emergency procedures more reliable. And we can also use checklists inside reliability engineering to make launches more reliable. In the original incarnation of this checklist, we actually kept it in a wiki document. So we had a master checklist in a wiki. And for every launch that a launch lead engineer was engaging with, they would make a copy of this checklist and customize it and then go through it. Over the years, we got a little bit more sophisticated. And right now, what it looks like is this. We built a tool called Production Advisor that is a kind of self-service checklist tool. So it will ask you questions about the nature of your launch, and then it will automatically adapt the checklist to your needs. So it will add new questions, it will add suggested actions for you to take, it will add information that you might want to look into for your launch, et cetera, et cetera. And it will also provide you with concise views of the different things, the different actions that you should be looking at. That adapts automatically, and you can also write your own checklists using this tool for different areas. If you have a different area that has a different need, you can write a new checklist. Under the hood, this is powered by a YAML file. Looks like this. This is the YAML file that powers the previous page of the slides. And you basically put all the information in there. You check what other answers it depends on, make things visible on demand, and so on and so forth. All right, so this is how we did the technical implementation of the checklist. Let's look at a couple of the boxes that we need to tick. So let's start with architecture. And our launch checklist is basically split into two parts per section. One of them is questions, information gathering. You need to know what is being launched in order to tailor the possible actions to it. And the second part is actions that the product engineering team should take. So on the architecture side, one of the things that you might ask for is, please give me an architecture diagram of your service. And this is actually one of the most useful things that I've found in doing any sort of service review, getting an architecture diagram and getting the dependencies. What is the request flow of your service? Where do user requests enter the service, and which dependent services do they hit? Are there specific latency requirements for specific types of services? Can you afford long-running requests for a particular kind of request? Do other requests need to be faster? Actions for this section might be, if you've detected that we're mixing user-facing and batch requests inside the same system, maybe isolate them from each other. Typically, user-facing requests, we're interested in latency, batch requests, not so much. So you can achieve better utilization and better reliability by isolating them from each other. Also, validate the volume assumptions. You don't want to end up in a situation where you underestimated the volume of the requests that you're going to get, because maybe in some part of the system, one request turns into two requests rather than one, and suddenly you might only have half the capacity that you need. Next one, let's look at capacity. Is there going to be press or promotions for this launch? Do we expect a launch spike? Especially for publicity-heavy launches, we found that we get a lot more engagement on the first day of launch than afterwards. So typically, immediately after launch, you will see a spike in traffic, and then it will sort of taper down, and maybe on the next day there's another news cycle, you get another spike, and then it tapers off again, and so on. And at some point, it will reach a stable level. But you need to be prepared for this launch spike to happen. In fact, launch spikes, we found out, are one of the most difficult things to predict, because it is incredibly hard to say from the outset how people are going to to react to press. We've had instances where we underestimated the launch spike of new launches by a factor of 10 or more. We did not think that people would be this crazy about this particular launch. Last question, compute resources needed? Well, if you know how much capacity you need, then you need to estimate how much resources you need for this. Actual possible actions in this section, perform a load test, so you actually know how user actions are going to translate into compute capacity, and obviously obtain the resources. Next one, reliability, because we want launches to be reliable from the start. So, questions. What are the failure modes of this system? What happens when the individual parts of the system fail? Are there any single points of failure? If the answer to that is yes, the action is usually get rid of that single point of failure. What happens when some of your dependencies fail? What happens when some of the services that you depend on just go away? Can you just degrade the experience, or is the user experience going to go away? Actions, things like implementing request deadlines, isolating yourself from your dependencies. Maybe you can move one of your dependencies from a runtime dependency into a startup dependency and isolate yourself that way. Monitoring questions. What are useful metrics for this product? What are alert conditions? When do you want to send an alert to one of your engineers to fix the system? What is the required SLO for this system? Can we get away with 3 nines of reliability for this system? Do we need 4 nines? Do we need 5 nines? Actions, instrument the metrics that you've talked about. Document the alerts that you're sending. Set up an on-call rotation so you can actually reach one of your engineers. Automation. Are there any manual procedures? Are there special procedures needed to keep the system running? If there's manual procedures, automate them. If there's special procedures, document them, so that when the one engineer that knows how to do that special procedure gets hit by a bus, you can still perform it. Growth. What is the expected traffic growth? Are there architectural limitations that will keep you from growing? How do you know when you need to redesign the system because it's not going to be able to weather the growth? Actions, well, set up a growth alert so you know when that point comes. Dependencies. Does this launch depend on any external partners? Are there contractual obligations tied up in this launch? Are we using third-party code? Actions, well, if you're depending on external partners or external partners depend on you, make sure they are in the loop and notify them of what you're doing and coordinate launch plans with them. Last section, rollouts. Are there any hard deadlines for this launch? Are there marketing efforts that we need to coordinate with? Actions might be create a rollout plan. Create a plan that says, for every step that's needed for the rollout, how to perform that step, and who is going to perform that step on launch day. And I've seen rollout plans for Google products that had 30 and more individual steps in them across a space of several days. So this is how complex these things can get. And if there's marketing efforts, maybe create a backup plan for marketing if you're missing that hard deadline. Because from the engineering side, you might say, well, we're just not ready. We can't launch it in this state. But marketing has their beautiful deck, and it says, hey, we launched this product. That is not going to go over well when they're on stage at a conference and announcing the launch of a product that we've not actually launched. So this can be as simple as having a backup deck for marketing that says, well, we are going to launch this product in the next week. So this is the checklist And this checklist, well, this is an example of contents for the checklist. The actual Google checklist, we grew over a period of more than 10 years, and we've regularly curated it. This checklist, if you're deciding to make a launch checklist, is going to be very much depending on your company. And it's going to be very much depending on the types of things that you launch, the types of questions that you usually face, and so on. So these are just examples of things that can go on the checklist. So let's use the last 4 minutes to talk a little bit about specific techniques for reliable launches. And I'm just going to talk about three of them very briefly. We have more in the SRE book if you want to look at them. The first thing I want to talk about, we actually had in yesterday's keynote already from LinkedIn, which is feature flag frameworks. Having a framework that allows you to enable and disable features without having to do a rollout. So rollouts and releases tend to be fairly slow because we do them kind of gradually. For features, you usually want to be able to make them available on a very, very short timescale. So you want to be able to take a feature from an unlaunched to a launch state or back in a short amount of time, and you don't want to have to wait for a rollout. So feature flag frameworks help incredibly much here because they allow you fine-grained control over who you make certain features available to. Next one, gradual rollouts. Well, you probably all know about gradual rollouts. We try not to launch anything without a gradual rollout. This typically creates a certain amount of tension with marketing, because marketing tends to prefer making a big splash and just flipping a switch and making the new feature available around the world for everybody. It's quite at odds with the SRE incentive of making things reliable. But still, we tend to insist on doing gradual rollouts, even for big launches, to minimize the danger to our systems. So we'll typically, even when we have a large marketing effort, we typically launch something to 5 or 10% of our users in advance of the marketing effort, and sort of let those 5 to 10% of the users test drive the features without having announced it. And then once marketing gets going, we launch it to 100%. And the last thing I want to mention is dark launches. Especially for feature launches inside our services, what we can very often do is if this feature requires new backend interactions, if this feature sends new requests to one of our backends, we can very often turn this on in sort of incognito, in dark mode, send the new request to the backend, and just throw the result away in the front end, so that even before anything is visible to the users, before we expose anything externally, we already have the full traffic to the backend. We basically get a load test of the backend with real production traffic, without exposing anything to the outside world. So that's a very powerful technique if you're launching something that has new implications on your dependencies.